This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. It's our public health series today with my co-host, Azrul Mohammad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Center for Health and Social Policy. How are you today, Azrul?
Very well, thank you, Sharon. Looking forward to this very important discussion.
That's right. Today, we are looking at mobility aids for people with disabilities. And do they belong on the roads? And, you know, with the following the announcement by the Ministry of Transport that happened, if I'm not mistaken, it was before Hari Raya, that these personal mobility aids come under some of the micro-mobility vehicles that will be banned from public roads and areas involving mixed traffic flow. What exactly does this mean? And more importantly, how does this impact mobility, independence, access, ability to move around for people with disabilities who do need to use these kinds of micro-mobility vehicles and really have very limited opportunities, unlike able-bodied people in terms of accessing services and spaces. So joining us to discuss this, Associate Professor Dr. Naziati Mohammad Yaakob from the Department of Architecture in the Faculty of Built Environment, University of Malaya, as well as Edmund Lim, co-founder and president of Persatuan We Care Journey, and also a caregiver to his son who has spinal muscular atrophy and does get around on a wheelchair. So we have these various perspectives to help shed more light, to help us understand better the challenges faced by the community of those living with disabilities. Dr. Naziati and Edmund, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thanks, Xiaowei. Thanks, Azrul, for having us here.
And you can call us if you have questions, but also if you have an experience that you'd like to share, or if you'd like to weigh in on these recent news about banning personal mobility aids from public roads. You can call us at 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. I do want to emphasize that we're looking at the devices, the mobility aids used by people with disabilities. So we're talking about the wheelchairs or those like electric wheelchairs or what they call scooters as well. We're not talking about the e-scooters that you do see being used by the able-bodied. That's more for leisure, if I can put it that way. We're looking at what the people with disabilities are using. But Dr. Naziati, perhaps I can start with you to set the stage. If you can enlighten us on, you know, we talk about people with disabilities, but they're not a homogenous group. You're a diverse community. Who do you represent in the community? And do you foresee that we will actually see people with disabilities becoming more and more part of our society?
Hi, I'm a polio survivor and also having vision impairment on my right eye. And I'm 60 years old. So as I grow older, I may be challenged with some sort of disability. So when we talk about the definition of disability, we could refer to the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which Malaysia is the signatory and ratified it in 2009 to 2010. So the definition here is that persons with disabilities include those who have long-term physical, mental, intellectual or sensory impairments, which in interaction with various barriers may hinder their full and effective participation in society on an equal basis with others. We're talking about the social model of disability that has been adopted by Malaysia and other countries around the world, whether or not we are still in the charity model or whether we are in the medical model, is you can see the evidence. So when talking about this idea of disability, it is actually a concept and is an evolving concept. Depending on the circumstances that a person is facing at that point in their life. So we know about it. It's about the impairment. We focus on, you know, the medical model focus on the impairment. So they focus on what you cannot do. But for the word, the social model disability, it focus on the barriers that is making life not easy for you and not an equal basis with others. Those social, attitudinal barriers that is put up by policies or by design or by operations and services that's provided, which does not look into the needs for the person with disability to be able to do like everyone else in education, in employment. So yeah, we're talking about a street environment. And when you talk about personal mobility aids, so we're inevitably, everyone will be disabled because there's statistics in the United States. For example, in 2019, 24.1% of adults ages 65 to 74 and 47.1% of adults ages 75 and older will have some disability, including cognitive, visual, auditory, ambulatory, self-care, or independent living difficulties. I like to go and focus as well on older persons or elderly persons in our country and the increasing aging population. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this statistic is similar to what's happening in Malaysia in 2040. 17% is reported by sources that is believable that 17% of the population will be elderly, and that will be plus 15% the World Health Organization population for disabled persons. So you can see that 17 plus 15, almost one third of people living in Malaysia need some special needs. Can these special needs be usual needs? Can it be already incorporated, already considered in the planning and strategic planning and of the country, you know, to aid with the aging population, for example? So you're not talking about a little tiny minority here. We're talking about a sizable amount of people, and families will be affected by if there is no personal mobility aids allowed. Families who want to go out in recreational areas and sports, you know, things that other people do normally. Yeah. And apart from employment and education I mentioned earlier, which everybody needs to go and you know, be part of society. So we have recreational facilities, going to the streets, going to transportation or transit from the bus stop to the bus, to the pavements, to the crossings. You know, all these have to be well designed and thought of to have seamless connectivity. So seamless connectivity is close to the PD, personal mobility and aids, yeah, PMDs. I mean, in terms of power wheelchairs, I can't use power wheelchairs. I mean, I think I'll go into that later, but in this point, I just talk about the diverse is mental disabilities with considered physical, sensory, deaf persons and blind persons, and cognitive, intellectually disabled persons. Yeah, and disability is inevitable for everyone.
Yeah, and considering the vast scope that we're talking about. And so, Edmund, you know, from your perspective, if you can share with us, and I think you would bring in that family perspective that Naziati talked about, you know, how does your son's condition affect his mobility? And you know, from there, what challenges does he face in terms of what he can and can't access compared to an able-bodied person?
My son, Brandon, he has a rare condition called spinal muscular atrophy. So it's a neuromuscular condition that when he was from very young, he wasn't able to turn in bed, and he has never been able to, right? Because SMA weakens his ability to move so much so that, you know, if he's on one side, he can't turn to the other. So you can imagine now at his age, he can't get from one side of the bed to the other. Right. So when you ask about access, he can't even get out of bed by himself. But when you take into account you know, me as a father, you know, my wife, you know, his brother and aunts, uncles, whoever can help him. Then of course, excess sort of changes, right? Because we can lift him, right? He's 25 kilos. It's not the heaviest, but still not the easiest to carry, but we can carry him around. So if I think of excess as getting him from point A to point B, at his current size and weight, I guess there are many places that we can move him to, right? But the challenge is what is the level of participation that he can have. That's a completely different question. And then, you know, whether he's going to be able to participate independently in the space that we've moved him to, I think that's going to be also a different question. And that's where things like technology comes in, and whether, you know, when he is using the technologies that does give him the ability to move, is he then hampered or constrained by other factors around him, other obstacles, you know, other barriers?
Well, perhaps I could ask this question to both of you, both yourself, Edmund, and Professor Nazyati, is, you know, obviously, as was mentioned just now, it's not a homogeneous group. It's quite diverse and it's quite myriad in terms of the needs of those who are living with disabilities, but also even in terms of children and adults. And when we are talking about personal mobility aids, are they different when it comes to looking at what children need versus what adults need to have when it comes to being independent or being able to move from one point to another, as mentioned by Edmund just now? Perhaps, Edmund, you would like to start first.
Yeah. What everyone thinks of a wheelchair, they think it's one thing. There are different types of wheelchairs, right? So there are the manual wheelchairs, which are actually fairly light, you know, an adult and even maybe a bigger child can actually lift it, and it's powered by hand. And then the powered wheelchairs, and again, even powered wheelchairs, the different powered wheelchairs, they are the smaller pediatric wheelchairs, but they still weigh probably about 40, 50 kilos. And then they're the big adult sized powered wheelchairs, and those weigh probably about 100 kilos easily. So there's a range. And then not just the wheelchairs, like, you know, one of our friends, she shuffles around on the board. It's a bit like a mix of a skateboard with a steering wheel. And then there are many other aids like this that actually enable people with mobility issues to move around. And I'm sure there are other technological, you know, advances overseas as well that allow, you know, different ways of movement. And I think Professor Nazyati mentioned scooters as well. So that's not a wheelchair. It's slightly different, but it's a scooter. And that's for people with who are a bit stronger, but still having mobility issues. You see a lot of those, I think, in countries like Australia for the elderly, that they can still walk, but then they need some help. So they get on a scooter and then they sort of ride away.
I think we're starting to see some of that in the malls. We're seeing some of these devices being used by adults. Prof. Nazyati, in terms of adults, what do they need?
Yeah, I would like to echo the need for accessible environments, so that scooters is something that is not find strange, only limited to the mall, but more on the street environment. The evidence must be seen that local authorities make these street environment crossings, pavements, curb cuts, you know, where at the corners where you can access it is designed such that you can access with a power scooter or a motorized wheelchair. I mean, I don't have these devices simply because I know that the environment is disabling and I would end up using this the wheelchairs, even though motorized or not, on the roads along with the other motorized vehicles. So it sounds motorized, but it's not as, you know, big and safe and stop putting us or relegating us with unsafe areas, you know, the crossings and so on. And there are many pedestrian crossings that are not accessible, so to get from one place to another. I can cite a few examples, but focusing also on the need to actually have better enforcement on motorbikes going onto the pavements, because that's the clash. We're not talking about PDAs or wheelchairs going into motorbike lanes or cycling lanes. We're talking about motorbikes going to pedestrian safe zones. So, you know, then they created, with the right intention, of course, but sidestepping the enforcement issue, is this motorcycle barriers. And some scooter, people using scooters or motorized wheelchair is a bit higher. They may have problem entering this barrier. So you have, you know, it's you want to impede the cyclists in a way, the dimensions of where this barriers are being designed, they cannot go through. But you know, this will also result in some wheelchair users or those using personal mobility devices not entering the pedestrian zone.
Mm.
So yeah, that's the reason. One of the reasons why I don't have this, because I can't even go onto the pavements.
So what do you use, Dr. Naziati?
I use wheelchair, manual wheelchair, or I use crutches.
Mm.
So for short distances, I would use crutches. So it's easier for me to maneuver. But, you know, I have to keep myself fit, you know, because in order to do so. So it does take a bit of a balance ledge, a bit more challenges in our streets in Malaysia.
Thank you so much for, you know, illustrating those barriers, Dr. Naziati, because many of us, and clearly a lot of policymakers, take these for granted and do not understand the challenges viewed from the eyes of somebody whose mobility is impaired in that sense, you know, and how you would be able or unable to navigate. I do want to continue to explore more about the challenges, both from Dr. Naziati and Edmund's perspective, when it comes to then, you know, the assumption that some people may have, well, if you can't, you know, manage your wheelchair, you know, just get somebody to drive you to the spot or something like that. You know, if you could continue to share with us scenarios or examples where your access has been impeded, and those kinds of assumptions are extremely unhelpful. We will pick this up after the break. I'm speaking to my co-host, Azrul Mohammad Khalib, CEO from the Galen Center for Health and Social Policy, for our public health series. We're discussing personal mobility aids and used by people with disabilities and how they will be affected by the Ministry of Transport's ruling that these devices will be banned from public roads and areas involving mixed traffic flow. We are both speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Naziati Muhammad Yaakob from University of Malaya and Edmund Lim from Persatuan We Care Journey. We will pick this up again. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. My co-host for the Public Health Show today, Azrul Mohammad Khalib, CEO from the Galen Center for Health and Social Policy, joining me as well. And we're speaking to Edmund Lim from Persatuan We Care Journey and Associate Professor Dr. Naziati Mohammad Yaakob from the Department of Architecture at the Faculty of Built Environment, University of Malaya. They're sharing perspectives as Edmund is a parent to a child with spinal muscular atrophy, needs a wheelchair to get around. Dr. Naziati herself uses as well a manual wheelchair, sometimes crutches. And so we're talking about how people with disabilities who use personal mobility aids will now be very, very severely impacted by the Ministry of Transport's ruling that devices like wheelchairs cannot be on public roads anymore, and even areas involving mixed traffic flow. And I would like to find out more. Edmund, perhaps I will turn to you now. You know, Dr. Naziati talked about environments, right? And let's focus on street environments today are being disabling in themselves, because crossings, pavements, curbs are, you know, poorly designed or perhaps not well maintained, and therefore are inaccessible to people who are on wheelchairs. Can you provide some examples from your perspective?
Yeah, shall we? So where I live is in a mature neighborhood, and we live for short distance, you know, less than a 5-minute walk to, you know, shops and restaurants. And it's quite a shame, because, you know, to bring, you know, Brandon there in a wheelchair, you know, it's quite a mission. Firstly, I head out to my house and there is no pavement on the side. So already I'm either against traffic or with traffic on a small road, right? So when we get out and then we hit a junction, I turn left and there's car parked. So if the car's parked, I'm out on the road. If I turn right, I can get to a pavement. But like what Dr. Naziati said, the curb cuts, which is the slopes heading into the pavement, right, isn't the right way, because it's tilted and it's too short. So therefore, it's dangerous, even if I'm there pushing, you know, Brandon on a wheelchair, because it can topple, because it's just been designed, it's been put in improperly. That's all I can say, right? It's tilted, it's too steep. And when you get down the pavement, it's broken halfway. So you can't get further on. And then when you get down, assuming that, okay, I get down, the funny thing is that pavement is probably a foot, a half a foot high, right? I don't know why our standard is that, right? Pavements are like this high. So you can't actually safely even get a wheelchair off it, provided if you do, because, you know, I'm there, it's possible, but Brandon won't be able to by himself. Then you try to cross the road. So I think there's no traffic light, there's no zebra crossing, and I'm doing something obviously now supposedly illegal. So I can't go to the shops, I can't go to the restaurant, you know. And when I get to the shops, that's the other thing, because it's on an incline, and these are old neighborhoods. You've got a big drain, you've got a step. The only way to get in is probably I use one of the car mechanic garages. That if there's no car on the slope, I can get in. But guess what? I'll get two shops down. The restaurant's the third shop. There are two steps. So it's just as simple as me getting to the shops outside. And if I want to get to the park, which is also very close, it's the same sort of, you know, difficulty that you're pushed into the road because the pavement's either not safe, or if it's there and it's wide enough and it's safe, it's not maintained. So there's an issue of poor maintenance, and I think there's an issue of when they put it in, whoever put it in just wasn't thoughtful. Either that or our regulations isn't per what it should be. So the curb cuts can just go flat to the road, right? But I don't know why even curb cuts have to have a bump. And the bump is probably an inch. So I'm thinking you may have a good curb cut with a bump, which is actually quite difficult to get up if you're trying to turn in and you don't have enough space. So that's just me trying to get to the shops.
that is indeed. We're talking about just a very fundamental need and service there. And the playground as well, or the neighborhood park, like you said, for recreation, not something that we should dismiss out of hand. Dr. Naziati, are there other scenarios that you'd like to share as well, perhaps? And, you know, Edmund is sharing as a parent, and he can, at least for now, still help lift the wheelchair and things like that. But for an adult, it's a very different picture, isn't it?
Yes, I had travel before where I need to get out of the wheelchair, and I'm blessed that I'm able to get out of the wheelchair. There are many people who can't use their legs to stand up. So what happened is that if there is like a very high curb, if there's somebody with me, it's good. Or if I'm alone, I just have to push the wheelchair up, get onto the pavement and pull the wheelchair up. So doing that all the time is not, you know, it injures my arthritis, and in the long run, it's not very good. I mean, but that's kind of like not a normal thing, you know. For those who are not able to use both legs, they just have to end up using the road. Now, Edmund was starting to talk about the nib, or the end of this curb ramp, you will have suddenly a different angle that was built into. So clearly, that was built without following the standards. So what happened is this different angle. Just say the angle, the major angle is 1:8 or 1:10, which is doable. But then the other angle is 1:4. That is safety issues. Person can topple easily. So for that, if I come across that, I will get out of my wheelchair and push the wheelchair upwards. So it's tedious. And you shouldn't find things implemented which is not according to standards, of course. You know, when it's 50 millimeter or 2 inches, you can have 1:8 ramp, and it's doable. I can wheel across it without getting out of a wheelchair. So normally I'm of average strength when you compare with other wheelchair users. There are wheelchair users that are stronger, of course. Then when you come to 150 millimeters or above, you know, or 50 millimeters or above, 166 150, okay, sorry, 150 millimeters, like 6 inches, you need to have 1 to 12 gradient. So it's longer. Mm-hmm. So the higher you go, just now Edmund was saying the pavement height is too high. So if you go for 8 inches, 8 inches or 9 inches, 2 to 5 millimeters, which is a standard, by the way. If you go to many streets, they've upgraded the pavement to 9 inches. Still, you need to have a 1 to 12 gradient, and you don't have those safety hazards that come with it that was described earlier. In order for you not to, you know, in order for you to have safe, there are three things here for barrier-free principles. It's accessible, it's safe, safety issues, and it's usable. You know, because the pedestrian environment is for the pedestrian. We're not supposed to go to the motorized vehicle. So when you see motorized vehicle, you see the big truck, and then you see the 5-4-wheel drive, and then you see the sedans, and then you see the motorcyclists, right? And then there is this fine line between the motorcyclist and the cyclist, bicyclist. Bicyclist is already a non-motorized vehicle. They should have their own lane because it's dangerous for them to also mix with the motorized vehicles, such as the motorcyclists, who like to infringe on their area. As you see in Kuala Lumpur, they have designated cycling lanes, and which even have bollards. But and this motorcyclist would go onto the cyclist lane, and sometimes, often, in certain areas where there's congestion, on the pedestrian zone. For more of the non-motorized is also the wheelchair users and so on. I think that when we talk about this infrastructure that is needed, you know, in Malaysian towns and cities, is the clear boundaries or clear designation of these different areas. For the non-motorized, you see attempts made in Jalan Tunku Abdul Rahman for the tourist areas where there is a buffer of landscape. Just say you have enough space to do a 1.5 meters pedestrian area sidewalk, hard surface for the pedestrian. Then you have a little bit of an area for the shrubs, and then you have the little bit area could be 500 millimeters or slightly bigger, and then you can have the curb, and then
the road.
That's a fence. Mm-hmm. We called it, this is an important point, the guardrail. These are technical terms, but these are guardrail. In areas where you have just pedestrian environment of 900 millimeters, if there are a main street, you should have a guardrail as well, because people tend to squeeze there, and then especially in the busy touristy area in downtown Kuala Lumpur. So the neighborhoods, you don't have a proper safe area for pedestrian in some areas. So we as Malaysians, we should be mindful of our community needs. The drains can be covered to be made walking area. You can imagine all the drains covered. I mean, people tend to go and like put stuff, you know, they do a different structure outside their gate. It is illegal for them to use those drains or those areas to tanam papaya or mango or whatever. To be honest, Singapore, they take over this, the government take over this drains and make them pathways. Mm. You see, so that you don't have to langa, you don't have to go and go into the motorized area.
There are probably some pretty irate residents from neighborhood, but we are all familiar. Definitely, we're familiar with what you're describing, Dr. Naziati. Azrul?
Yeah, I even do that.
Well, Prof, one of the issues that you raised just now, also, Edmund, was really concerning how you can have really good public transportation systems that are disabled friendly, and then it's about the last and first mile, right? And I have seen near Mid Valley, for example, people are using wheelchairs where they're trying to get from the commuter station to the mall, and there is a walkway, there's a pathway, it's very clear. But as you mentioned just now, it's high. The gradient is
too steep.
Just too steep. They can't raise themselves up onto the pavement. The pavement itself is cobbled, so there might be some problems there. But most importantly, there is a danger of sliding back, you know, and losing control of your wheelchair. So they find it actually safer to be on the tarred road, the tarred surface, because it's uniform. You can see where the holes are. It's predictable. And so you see this group of people on wheelchairs going up that road. And this is where, for a lot of people, and correct me if I'm wrong here, people have this thinking that using personal mobility aids such as wheelchairs are really confined to indoors, that it's not something you can imagine being an outdoor type of a device. So how do we go about dealing with something like this? Obviously, it's poor planning. Obviously, there's not enough consideration. But these are the realities of people living with disabilities every day. They need to be able to be independent. They need to go to these places. And they find that it's actually safer to do something that they're told they should not do, or people cannot imagine why would you do that, you know? So how do we go about addressing this problem, Prof?
Oh, okay. You see, when they cannot imagine, yeah? So I always ask the architects, designers, property developers, contractors, you are designing the future of your older selves. You know, when you're older, are you going to be confined to the house alone? Are you just going to be confined to the bedroom, to the kitchen alone? You know, there are other, for a healthy psychosocial environment, yeah, environment for the mental of well-being of our elders later. We have to see ourselves in their shoes of not being afraid to just go and have a walk around the neighborhood to exercise, which is a very important need to make, you know, if you want to do other activities as well, be with your grandchildren or, you know, just take going around the playground. So you're scared because the cars are traveling very fast and you remember falling at the curb. You know, these are painful things that would impede your mental health so that you can go into a depression. So the environment, when you talk about housing environment, where everybody starts from the bedroom to the bathroom and then go to the kitchen and they do the everyday, daily living activities, go to the groceries. The spectrum of care needed to be understood by people when they design the environment. Like active living is you can do most things. And then you go into independent living and some disabled person able to do most things, drive and go around in public transport. So if those things are impeding them, which of not their fault, right? So it just make it more difficult, more costly, but they can do independent living. They have less choices. So then you have assisted living. So everyone would have to go to assisted living. And at what age? We don't know. Due to a disease or something, stroke or a heart problem or certain disease, you need help. People cooking or buying goods or buying shopping for you. So assisted living has to happen. And then there's assisted living, then there's nursing care. Assisted living can be like one person helps you, two person help you, three person. So it deals with cost unless your family members volunteer to assist you. So, you know, we're talking about many things like do you need to relocate house because your house no longer, you cannot go to upstairs anymore. And, you know, you live in an area where it's so busy, the street, you cannot cross the street. At one time in a certain neighborhood, they cycle a lot, but because of snatched thieves, they don't cycle a lot. Number two is that it become more commercialized, this area, a mature neighborhood in the 80s. Now there's a lot more restaurants and so on. The cars drive so fast. And the crossings need to have more safety guards, you know, for them to cross so that they can just go to the shops, you know. So this is happening all around in our neighborhoods. And I would like to focus on the neighborhood more than in the township, in the tourist area, because there's always focus on the tourist area, mm-hmm. you know, but we have to create this environment for our aging population. increasingly.
And when where community is in these neighborhoods, isn't it? And exactly what Edmund described, you know, just stepping out of his house already, the barriers are numerous. I just want to share this message from Muhammad Shahani, who's pointing out the walkway from the LRT station to Mid Valley, and it's over the drain, but many of the drain covers are missing, which again, a scenario that I'm sure both Edmund and Dr. Naziati are well familiar with. Let's go for a quick break. And when we come back, perhaps Edmund will be able to share some thoughts on where some neighbourhoods have done it well, perhaps in terms of facilitating access or enabling or removing barriers for people with disabilities. And how do we move forward with these the ruling by the Ministry of Transport? What alternatives can we offer, or do people with disabilities need? Do keep your messages coming in if you'd like to share any thoughts, especially if you've encountered the same kinds of barriers shared by Edmund and Dr. Naziati. You can either call us at 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. I have my co-host Azrul Muhammad Khalid from the Galen Centre of Health and Social Policy joining me for our public health show. We're speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Naziati Muhammad Yaakob from the Department of Architecture at the Faculty of Built Environment, University of Malaya, and Edmund Lim from Persatuan We Care Journey. Stay tuned to Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik, on our public health show today. My co-host, Azrul Muhammad Khalid from the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy. Joining us as well, Associate Professor Dr. Naziati Muhammad Yaakob from the Department of Architecture, Faculty of Built Environment at the University of Malaya, and Edmund Lim from Persatuan We Care Journey. We're discussing personal mobility aids that are used by people with disabilities and how they will be affected by the ruling that these devices are now banned from public roads and areas involving mixed traffic flow. We've heard a lot about the challenges that people with disabilities, those using wheelchairs and similar aids, the challenges that they face, the barriers that are presented by poorly designed and poorly maintained infrastructure on our roads. Edmund, on the flip side, though, are there places that do it well?
Yeah. Brandon got a more technologically advanced wheelchair about 2-3 years ago, and he's been always raring to, you know, go out, and we feel safer as well, you know, him being able to go out with it. And the two neighborhoods we found surprisingly actually very accessible and safe enough for him to sort of let him go. One is the uptown, Damansara uptown. And you'd be surprised that if you go to the mall there, which is Starling, right, and you can actually safely get up and around to the shop lots and from the shop lots, because the pavement ways there are wide. They are, like what Dr. Naziati mentioned earlier, they are guardrails in appropriate places. And the curb cuts are really good, right? The curb cuts are flat and very, you know, it's a safe incline. So we felt safe enough in most spaces for him to sort of navigate around for us to go get something to eat. And the other one is Desa Park City, right? Desa Park City is the same, that, you know, we've been quite happy to let him get around, because, you know, I think, again, Dr. Naziati spoke about, you know, where there are borders. So there are borders between the safe, the pavement area and the road. And when they cross roads, they've made all the curb cuts there as well safe enough to be able to get from one side to the other. Where the limitations usually happen are people, right? Like Dr. Naziati mentioned, motorcycles. We've had that before. Motorcycles parked in inappropriate places, blocking ramps. And the other one is when you're crossing roads and cars just won't stop. Sometimes they just won't stop. Even when you got a wheelchair, you're having your hand out, they pretend not to see you. I think, you know, it's improving, but, you know, that's an attitude thing, that, you know, leaving aside infrastructure, if we as people, as a public, just are a lot more conscious and wanting to let, you know, all our common spaces that we use be more inclusive, be more accessible, that can really make a difference in terms of safety, right? Just being more mindful and, in, you know, giving better safe space, giving way.
It definitely starts with attitudes, yeah. Dr. Naziati, where do we go from the announcement made by the Ministry of Transport? What does this mean for the community and your ability to navigate spaces now?
Yeah, we have to put pressure on the government by being vocal about our needs and remind them of that they signed the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities And they also have a Person with Disability Act, which is an administrative act, and other laws such as Uniform Building Bylaw. Uniform Building Bylaw 34A, under the Streets, Drainage and Building Act, says that a disabled person should be able to access, use, and come out of the building. So coming out of the building or safely exit the building also means there is what they call a means of escape in case of an emergency that is well placed for them to exit the building.
Mm.
So these include transportation building. So buildings out there, you cannot exclude. In the Act, in our rights, we have to go to schools, universities, hospitals, and all these facilities, the community facilities, and we have to go out onto the streets. Now, it's kind of a shame that if we have to own a car, and then you know, public transportation should be made available to us and the streets be made accessible and safe and usable for us as well. So we are involved in designing the universal design bus stop. We consider blind persons using buses because they don't have much choice in terms of public transportation. So the diverse community now come into place, come into contention when we're talking about designing for all people. Yeah. So the sensory impaired, such as deaf persons and blind persons, they need to go around as well to get for the deaf persons more information, emergency devices. When there's emergency happen, how do they know they're in emergency information to be given to them? For the blind person, how do they know they arrive at a bus stop at all? And whether there are navigation applications have been done, the Google apps and other apps that they can go around using their public transportation system. So this projection in the future seems to be at loggerheads with this announcement that says that we cannot use the streets. I am just perplexed that
it's going 10 steps back, you know?
Yeah. So being involved in this designing of the universal design bus stop with the Kuala Lumpur City Hall, we consider three user group first: the wheelchair user, the person with a weaker lower limbs for the seating area, the seats, and also for the blind person to actually know where to stand in the bus stop when they want to embark and disembark. Mm-hmm. We have had discussions with Ministry of Transport, Rapid KL, Pusarana, MRT Corp, and we had validation by blind persons and wheelchair users for the first version. An example is there in Jalan Ma'ruf, Bangsa. We had opportunity because of the sedimentation there that we had a readily available design, and we worked with the Jabatan apa implement. I forgot the name of the bargain, but DBKL, you know, and hand in hand, and they had the contractors come in because, you know, these are the points and where the links are the other edges and crossing. We have to work on that so it could be seamless and safe for everyone, school children.
So with a move, and with that, that's a promising, you know, progress, you know, and then this kind of announcement is totally contradictory. Azrul.
Well, I have an update on that announcement, really. Just before there was a break, just before the break, Raya break, the Minister of Transport, Datuk Sri Wikasiong, actually made an announcement that basically after a meeting with Senator Datuk Rasadiba, basically said that for those who were persons with disability using their personal mobility aids, basically doing what they're told not to do, there would not be any enforcement action that would be, you know, taken upon them. So basically what he has described is an exemption for the OKU community on the enforcement of those very same laws, which has been said to make it illegal.
You're dependent on the goodwill of enforcement officers.
Exactly. So you're going to be depending on whether or not the enforcement officers understand, and most importantly, is aware of the exemption.
Mm-hmm.
But I am heartened, and to go along the lines of what you're saying, Shaoit, about what can we do going forward, In the same announcement, the minister also emphasized the need for representatives from the Persons with Disability Committee to be members of the board for the MIROS Institute, the Malaysian Institute for Road Safety Research. So it would basically mean that you can prevent future, misunderstanding or, I don't know, misguided laws to be enacted in the future, which is quite a pity because you could actually prevent this from happening earlier on if you did proper consultation with people like Prof. Naziati here. So that is basically hopefully something that we can take moving forward. But I do hope that every enforcement officer out there who's looking at enforcing road safety would be available and aware of such an exemption for the OKA committee. But it's going to be a little bit confusing moving forward.
Absolutely. We're running out of time and I do have to wrap up, but perhaps with a look at then what can we prioritize right now in order to close the access gap? Dr. Naziati first, perhaps then I'll move to Edmund.
Rightly so, Azrul mentioned about MIROS Institute taking that role to get disabled persons representation and giving input for a better understanding of what to do, what should be done for the infrastructure, the pedestrian infrastructure. We have to include pedestrian, we have to include cyclists, and also we have to include neighborhoods, because I think the PD, personal mobility aids against personal mobility device happen. Somehow these scooters that the younger, maybe even older persons using them in certain places, they were causing, they deemed to be in danger. But you have to see behind what happened here. That is, these are people who had families coming out during the evening, want to enjoy the environment. Because I know an example in Kuala Lumpur, in a neighborhood, that there is an area where you have cyclists and older persons and those on these scooters enjoying the pavements, because the pavements are quite nice and wide. But the cyclists cannot enter the recreational park. Mm-hmm. That's why they go around this area. Mm-hmm. And because safety checks or safety design is not in place, therefore, these things happen.
Is there anything we can do right now that we should prioritize, Dr. Naziati?
Yeah, this is the immediate step where the collaboration between the the community and local authority come together to create more to create more of this area, because the local authority, most of the street environment is under the local authority.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm not talking about Desa Park City where the whole thing is by the developer. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about a lot of other environments where the
more diverse neighborhoods as well. Yeah, the mixed neighborhoods.
Quickly, we have to sort out the safety issues, the accessible issues.
Yeah. Edmund?
Yeah, just sort of follow up on Dr. Naziati's point is, we can work with all our aduns and try to fix what you can see, firstly, that we have, right? Because there is infrastructure in place, either poorly implemented or not properly maintained. Why don't we just try to fix some of these things? And we've got all these aduns all around the country. They should be able to support us in actually doing that. And if sometimes they don't really understand, the best thing is a user experience. Right, getting them down on the ground and understand what it actually is like. What a wheelchair is actually like. Let them try one and move around. Then I think that first-hand experience is going to be important, because when you sort of hear people tell you, you see white papers and all that, it doesn't really strike you. It's really that lived experience. It's being on the ground and realizing, oh, this is what it's like. Exactly. It looks okay on paper, but now I get it. And I think you get policymakers who get it, and you sort of marshal these aduns, and they're all in the different areas. I think we can start to at least just try. Come on, just try to make some change with what we have.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for speaking to us today. I've been joined by my co-host Azrul Mohamad Khalib from the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy. We've been speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Naziati Mohamad Yaakob from University of Malaya and Edmund Lim from Persatuan We Care Journey. This has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.